The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Or did I talk to the time pilot?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Beyond and hello and welcome once again to IGN's PlayStation Show. This is episode 787, and I am your host, Max Scoville. And joining me today are my good friends, Jada Griffin, Mark Medina, and Josh Du. What's up, everybody?
Beyond, everybody.
Beyond.
Just honored to be considered one of your good friends. This is, I'm learning about this for the first time right now.
Yeah, what an upgrade.
Wow, Mark. Now it's weird. I sent you a Christmas card, man. Anyway,
it's true. It's true. I read it every day when I'm putting ice in my cup.
But okay, the trick is, did Mark send one back to you, Max?
No, he sent me maybe a Slack message about, I don't know. Anyway, thanks for showing up, I guess, acquaintance. Anyway, before we get started, a little bit of housekeeping. IGN Fan Fest is coming up. That is a sort of virtual celebration of pop culture. We do gaming stuff, we do movie stuff, we do show stuff. There's a lot of brand new exclusive stuff you have never seen before. We talk to a bunch of cool people. We ask questions that you submitted. There will be prizes. That is Friday the 17th and Saturday the 18th. It kicks off at 10 a.m. Pacific on all of the various myriad media tendrils of IGN. So keep an eye out for that. Coming up, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. There are some new updates to PS5. I think people who like a variable refresh rate have got some stuff to be excited about. Sony reports some PS5 sales and a bunch of games as a service shutdown. Imagine that. Jada played around with the DualSense Edge. The Last of Us Episode 4 came out. And then Ryan McCaffrey, a known PlayStation hater and Xbox lover, went and checked out the PSVR 2 to play a bunch of Gran Turismo. I'm kidding. He had a really good time with it. We're going to talk about all that stuff, but first, we got something very cool. The IGN first for this month is Star Wars Jedi Survivor, and just this morning they dropped a big chunk of 9 minutes of gameplay showing off this new game, and man, I'm really, really excited for this. Jada, what was your read on this?
I'm not excited at all, Max.
What?
You're alone. You're the only person here excited. Just kidding. No, I loved it. This new content looks great. I love a lot of the new force powers we're getting. There's a time slow. I love some of the new little flourishes. He had little slice and dice with two lightsabers where you got to instantly quick step back. It looks great. It looks like there's a lot of things fans have been asking for, which is like a little bit bigger maps and more things to explore and see. We got to see a good chunk of that in the video we dropped this morning, so I'm excited.
Yeah, Mark, what about this? Are you a Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order survivor man?
Man, I've not been on this show in a while, and I'm always accused of having like spicy takes.
Oh boy.
And here we go. I did not super love the first game. And I've tried, it's one of those games that I've tried to play it multiple times. You know how it is. A spicy take means you just don't love everything. And
what,
I don't
what
love a, everything.
What about
so.
It? What about it didn't work for you?
I don't know. There's just something about it. I just don't know how much I love games like this anymore, I guess. I don't know. I've played it and I never felt compelled to. I don't really care about the main character. Very early on in the game, you go to like a snow planet, right? Maybe it's Hoth.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think it's Ilum. Yeah.
Okay. That's as far as I've ever gotten. And I remember just putting it down one day and I just never felt compelled to go back to it. And so when the PS5 version came out, I tried it again. And again, I was just like, nah, I just don't really care about this game. But I know people love it.
Do you
and
think it was,
I'm not saying it's bad. There's something about it.
I totally get where you're coming from. Like, I think, was it sort of that it felt almost like rudimentary, like structure-wise?
It, I don't love the map, and I don't love that it's kind of like it, I fault Borderlands for the kind of the same thing where it's just like it's this 3D map where you're just like, OK, have I gone here? Have I not? I know that's like a total Metroid thing that people love, but there's just something about the map. And honestly, just the story itself. I just didn't find the story itself very like engaging where I was super into it.
This gameplay does look cool,
and on paper, I feel like I should love it. Don't give him a pass, Max.
So this is the reason why I voted Mark off of Beyond.
This is why I'm not allowed on the show anymore.
I don't know if we're going to have you back, Marky. You got some... These takes are too spicy. We keep them nice and
vanilla
here.
Don't give me a pass because the audience surely
won't. This is a Frozen Yogurt kind of show, my friend. We keep things nice and bland. Josh, what about you? Were you into this one, the first one?
Yeah, I had fun. I think this is like my first foray as well into Souls Light type gameplay. Mm-hmm. I think this is the first time like I was playing a game and I was struggling with certain non-boss sections and like having to like go through certain... It's all these like narrow pathways, right? And now that I'm like watching this gameplay, now that Mark mentioned like the map and level design of the first game, I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of this just like very narrow pathways that don't really, I guess, make sense. And it's just like, there's so many planets here.
Now that I've informed
Josh
that it's actually not a good game. Now that I've let everybody know, hey guys, turns out you were all wrong.
Okay, here's the thing. Okay, the first one, I think we can all agree, Mark's probably right. First one sucks, really bad game. Everyone should hate it. The new one looks great though. Let's talk about the new one because they clearly are making a lot of changes. The first thing that we show off in the gameplay is the kind of scale of the game. Like one of the first things they demo is that you can now pick up your droid BD-1 and put its rear end right up to your face and look through its ass as binoculars or I don't know. It's a weird choice.
Just like in real life,
you can use it like binoculars, which I don't know. That's kind of odd for doing that with BD. Point is, it's basically, you know, you have a scope, like you're able to pull out your, you know, Sheikah Slate or whatever, your Far Cry 3 DSLR camera, and you can zoom off in the distance and tag stuff. Like, I want to go climb that turtle. And
why?
I don't know. Maybe you want
to I'm thinking in the first game, I never thought I would need to do that.
So that's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The game is so on rails that like I never was like, I wanted to do it Breath of the Wild style and be like, oh, there's that shrine I need to go to. If the level design of this new game is more open world, then like maybe.
They haven't said open world. And I think if it was true open world, they would probably come out and say that. But I mean, the first one had like a bunch of pretty large locations, but they were definitely more of that kind of like souls-like structure. Like they're kind of like a
corridors. And yeah. Like there's like, so there was a few branching paths and like alternate ways you could go through. But for the most part, when you needed to progress, there was one path to go through and it was through a corridor or down a ramp or up an elevator or something like
but
that.
But in this case, it seems like, I mean, why would they have binoculars if they weren't working on a larger scale with the map? Mm-hmm. And it's still very possible that it does look like it's got the similar kind of structure in terms of how you explore. But like, I mean, again, I don't think it's going to be full open world, but I think that one thing they're taking advantage of with this being a, you know, new gen hardware exclusive is hopefully larger scale. The planet they show off is called Kobo, which is not to be confused with Koboth. Kobo is a new planet. Koboth was introduced in the Droids cartoon and was recently recanonized in a Rogue One spinoff novel. Anyway, this is like a weird planet where you're running around, you kill a bunch of animals. I always love this, that whole thing where it's like, you're a Jedi, it's all about helping people, but also time to murder a bunch of these weird pig dog things. What, they live in a waterfall. I don't know. But just really, I love it. People were mad that there wasn't dismemberment in the first one, except for animals. You could cut up all sorts of animals and droids, but like it just didn't really work that way with humans. And people were like, it's bad Star Wars, make more blood, Disney.
Wait, Mark, you just said two lightsabers. Did you not get that far in the game where you got two lightsabers?
No, that comes at towards the very
That's
end.
A very late stage addition. Yeah. Like I know that was actually kind of one of the fun things about the game was that the double-bladed lightsaber and then the two lightsabers were both kind of big plot twists. So spoilers.
I'm proving that my naivety right now by revealing that I didn't even know you could do two lightsabers in the first game.
I mean, you're not faking it, which is, you know, better than a lot of us can say, but you know.
Yeah, maybe you'll enjoy that variation in combat more, because I think when they bust out those double lightsaber, I was like, okay, maybe I'll use this every once in a while, but they actually felt different combat wise. So it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I just say that I'm kind of excited that EA is kind of killing it on the single player front, which is something I didn't think I'd say like in 2023 between this and Dead Space, which I missed all the Dead Space episodes, but I'm really loving that game as well. They're kind of nailing it.
Yeah, what's going on over there? Like, I don't know. Something happened. I love that there was that tweet where they were like, there are 10, but they only play single player games, and like the video game industry and the fans and everyone just collectively just dunked on this one tweet. Friggin' Vince Zampella, who's the head of Respawn, he's on the board of directors, was basically like, with his Twitter, and I'm like, I feel like if I was that like social media person, I would just like jump out the window. I'd be like, bye.
I think Vince Zampella actually took a more controlling effort in a lot of EA's stuff right now. I think that was one of the things he got promoted to do over the last, year and a half or so. And this is probably where the dividends are starting to pay by seeing him in charge. So kudos to him. If he is the reason doing this, if he's not, kudos to the person who is making this happen, because we're happy to see EA doing these single player games. One thing I will say about the open world, not open world type stuff, this area that we've seen in the video, like he comes back to this hub. Cal comes back to this like kind of hub looking area with the meditation spot, and he goes in different branches. So my thought is there's going to be like kind of a like a center area that's wider, and then there's going to be a bunch of different branches to go and explore and find and do different things to kind of do that. I don't know how that's going to play out story-wise, if it's going to be like, hey, you have to go over here and then do this story thing and then come back to the hub and then go back to this other part for the story hub, or what's just going to be, you know, side stuff. Who knows? But I think we're going to see a lot more of a lot larger maps for exploration.
I really hope so. One thing that kind of lends itself to this is that they did announce that there's going to be fast travel, and there's also going to be rideable mounts, which they showed the mounts. He's like riding this Gallimimus looking thing in one of the first gameplay reveals, and then like fast forward 5 months or whatever, and everyone's like, mounts confirmed, and it's like, yeah, I thought we knew that. Anyway, fast travel is like the one thing I think the first game really, really was lacking. And to your point, Jada, like the fact that there wasn't really a hub world, the way that the levels worked in the first one, or the maps, or whatever you want to call them, is frequently like the Mantis would come in and land, and that would be sort of your starting point. But that was very like, that was linear rather than like radial. Like it wasn't like a center point that you worked out from. It was typically like, here's the edge of the map, and then you kind of progressed further into the world. And it was great, except when you had to backtrack or you like wound up. Like I was playing this game the other day. I'm replaying the first one. I'm repeatedly like hit over the head with how much I love it. And like, I really enjoyed it the first time around. I had a really good time, and going back and replaying it, I think there's always that kind of, you know, there's the novelty isn't really, I mean, like it doesn't have that sort of recency bias. Like it's familiar if anything, like I'm not really getting surprised by anything, but I am, you kind of find the things that aren't like, the things that are resistance, the things that are like frustrating are surprisingly few, and like the lack of fast travel is really one of the only noticeable ones for me. That and the load times. I'm playing it on Series X, but it's still got pretty noticeable load times, which is like, you know, it's annoying because it's a last gen game that's had plenty of patches since it came out, and like I really hope they adjust that, or you know, fix that for the new one, and you know, hopefully they do.
That was my main pain point as somebody who like whose single player game style is to just run and gun, like, and this was the first time I had to be like, oh, I know I kind of have to like take this slow and actually think about what I'm doing here, and I died a lot and the load times were just insane. Like I probably would have shaved like 5 hours off my playtime if like the load times were faster, so I really hope they fix that.
I actually pulled the IGN Beyond Facebook group and had a couple people are in line with a lot of the points we're making. Angelo Ray, I hope the map system gets refined. I get what they were going for in Fallen Order, but it was a hot mess to try and navigate.
Hey, Vindication.
There you go, Mark. There you go.
Yeah.
This is one thing that I noticed in this newest gameplay that we didn't bring up yet, but Kevin Garaventa, has the run animation improved at all? Cal ran like one of the three stooges in the first game. And I noticed in this new trailer that his walk animation was really kind of weird. I didn't notice it in the first game. Max, have you noticed that with going back? Like, does his walk animation or run animation look kind of wonky?
I haven't paid too much attention to it, but I
trying to remember.
I did interview Cameron Monaghan, and he had his entire leg in a cast, so I don't know if that was anything to do with it.
He did the mocap for his running while in a cast. It's like, too bad. We gotta meet quotas. We gotta meet deadlines. Sorry.
I think the entire I have played it recently, and I think the animations are a little wonky, but I don't think that's like necessarily a bad thing. But I do know what they're talking about, how he kind of throws his arms out when he starts running and stuff like that. Like, I don't think that's a bad thing, though. I mean,
it looks fine.
I found the game to control. Yeah, I found the game to control just fine. I think the thing that I notice is when you're making excuses for yourself to have to play a game or have to not play a game, that's when you can kind of take a step back and realize I actually just don't really want to do this. And for this game, the reason I started it back up is because I never played the next gen version, and I was like, I really need to play this, that way I can be caught up for Survivor. And then the moment Survivor got delayed, I was like, oh, I don't need to play this anymore. And I realized if I was actually enjoying the game, I would keep playing it. And it was totally in that moment I was like, I'm playing this for work, I don't care to keep playing.
It's only six weeks, Mark. It's only 6 weeks.
That's another thing we didn't touch on. This the game did get delayed. It got about a 6 week push, so now it's coming out on April 28th. So if you're like Mark and feel like there's homework you got to do, you can go and check this out. I mean, that's a very good point. Like games, people get mad if you call them a waste of time. They are frequently a time sink. Like, they are a hobby. That is the point. They are a very complex diversion. Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, it's an investment of time. And like, if you suck at a game, it will take you longer to play it. And if you were there to check out the story and you suck at the game, then it's going to take, it's a lot harder than like, I don't know, like a book that shuts itself on your hands. Like, it's just like, it pushes back. So that's a whole thing. And I don't know, I'm coming at this with a fair amount of Star Wars burnout. I think a lot of people are kind of in a similar boat where like, there've been a handful of really cool things, but like, we haven't gotten a movie in a cool minute. The last one we don't talk about. Andor was phenomenal, but like, I don't know, the Book of Boba Fett kind of made me stop collecting Boba Fett figures. Like, that kind of, I don't know.
Was the last movie Rise of Skywalker?
Was it, or was it Solo? No, Solo was the last. Was it? I don't even remember.
No, it was Rise of Skywalker.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
My
anyway,
gosh. I saw that in like at Lucasfilm with you guys before the pandemic. Man, the pandemic really stole some years.
That feels like a very long time ago. Anyway, but no, like I think it's like, I don't. This is a weird the sort of timeline for Fallen Order and Survivor is like a spot that I don't particularly care about. I was like kind of a hard sell on Cal Kestis. The thing that really won me over is I love how he interacts with BD-1 when they're like alone. Like, it's very it's very like earnest. It's very like, it's like Luke in R2, where he's like, "What are you doing over there, you little sneak? Come on back over here. What'd you find, buddy?" Like, it's very like a kid and his puppy. And then like, he comes back on the ship and he's like, "Yeah, I found some new lightsaber parts while I was out killing stormtroopers." And it's like, yeah, he's like, "Hey dude, I found you some potted plants for your terrarium," or what. Like, it's just, I don't know, he's got like a totally different vibe. And you know, so I'm not, you know, I don't, I guess he won me over, which is like a, you know, testament to like a solid performance. And I don't, it's, I like that it's a self-contained adventure. You know, it's like a fairly, as far as games are concerned, it's a fairly short game by modern standards, which is manageable. And I'm really excited for the new one. The thing that it did that I really, really love is that it managed to sort of blur the lines between prequel and original trilogy. And there's a lot of Star Wars media that's doing that. It's most of the time in animated form. We've got some stuff like, you know, Andor and Rogue One. But the thing that this one does that's, I think Battlefront 2 did it to a certain degree, but it's, we're seeing CG versions of prequel era stuff alongside original trilogy stuff. And because it is like cutting edge modern CG that looks as realistic as the practical stuff from the original trilogy, but it's designs from the prequel era, it has this wonderful kind of melding effect where like the, you know, the character models for like battle droids in this and in Battlefront 2 are like higher resolution than the ones that are in the actual movie. Like, the first time they showed up in The Phantom Menace, it looks like a Windows XP wallpaper with a bunch of, you know, wonky armatures walking around. But the other thing I love, this is such a weird, like, little nerdy thing to call out. Cal's killing a bunch of, like, battle droids and super battle droids in this, but they're running around, and they're, like, they've got, like, custom paint jobs on them. And, like, the timeline this is, takes place at is, like, it's past the Clone Wars. Like, the Separatists aren't really a thing anymore. But there's, like, clearly some kind of weird, like, horned, I don't know, crime syndicate or, like, weird wasteland raiders, whatever the dudes that Cal is killing here, and they've like repurposed military hardware to their own needs. So they've got their own, like, it's like when, I don't know, you see like pirates have AK-47s or whatever. It's like this wonderful, like, oh, here's like the criminal underworld repurposing something from like a military surplus gear, which is just such a little, little call out. But
it's nice because they're also, we get a little bit of that in Bad Batch. We got a little bit of that in the Clone Wars animated series. Like, it's great. So I'm happy to see that as well.
It's cool. But
speaking of other, like, re-outfitting, we get bomber jackets now, like for no more just straight ponchos. Like, I know we had a couple people in the comments that were not, Robin Friend. I'm guessing that's their last name is Friend. And they're not just trying to be my friend, but no more ponchos. Give me Jedi robes. And then Sam Rhoda, I like collectibles, but those ponchos were pretty dumb. Would be cool to see some other type of clothing or accessories to collect. We're getting bomber jackets. Very exciting.
So weird thing. I feel like there's something they haven't showed us yet, which is, one of the pre-order bonuses for this is like a blaster. You can get Han's blaster. Yes. And there's also, you can have like, I think the Luke's jacket and Han's outfit or whatever. And it's, my theory is right now, either there's another playable character. Like there's another dude who showed up in one of the trailers who's like helping Cal up. So either there's a second character who shows up who has an entirely different play style that involves blasters, or Cal winds up getting a blaster, which would be interesting because it's kind of subverting the old Dark Forces to Jedi Knight thing where you start out with just guns and then you get Jedi stuff, whereas it would be the other way around where you're like, oh, I got to learn how to use a blaster now. I think they said for the first game, the collectibles was one of the last things they added. And they were kind of like, yeah, sorry, we were kind of running it on the clock. So you got ponchos and different shaders for your lightsaber. But, this time around, I don't think Jedi robes makes any sense, though, because you're trying to keep a low profile,
Yeah.
Right.
The bomber jacket totally fits and makes sense, though, because it kind of makes you like a runner.
I just hope they have something dumb looking. Like, I really want dumb looking cosmetics, because that's, I always put those on.
Do you want a Lego skin?
A Lego like skin.
Transform Cal into a Lego.
Yeah, or just him in his underwear. I like want to do like a naked souls man, like running around. Just
that would work. Yeah. You could do like back to tank Luke where he's wearing the weird little diaper and he's got the scuba mask.
Yes, that's a good one.
Yeah,
I have an action figure of that. I don't know why. It's not great.
Yeah, I know why.
Okay. Star Wars Jedi Survivor coming April 28th. All of the new gen hardware and the PC. I'm looking forward to this. I think it could have like game of the year potential, but it's also a pretty stacked year, so it's entirely possible it also just gets totally swept under the rug. But yeah. I don't know. The first game is pretty solid, and I'm really excited to see how they build on it. So, shifting gears. Speaking of new gen hardware and the like, and the PlayStation 5, as we're prone to, there was an update last week. The PlayStation 5 now supports 1440p. With variable refresh rate displays, which means that you can play the PS5 on your monitor, I guess, or your special gaming TV. Do any of you do this?
No. I have one. My gaming monitor, which is what I use for my computer, is a 1440p 165 hertz, and I love it because I'm a sucker for input lag. So VRR is great. But this TV behind me that people think is a window, it's just monsooning outside my house, is a 120 hertz 4K, so I already get the VRR there. VRR is wonderful, and I don't even mean to make it sound as nerdy as I'm making it sound.
I don't mean to mock it either. I think it's really funny that like Sony ships this brand new new hardware that's like, yeah dude, it's 4K, it's the super fast thing, and then people are like, yeah, but what if there was some kind of happy medium between 2K and 4K? Can we have that, like, I don't know. It's like, do you want the medium or large fries? Rates, can I have the medium and a half? Like,
refresh rates are just becoming so much of a thing because people are understanding input lag and they're high. They want to play something like Overwatch or something like that at 120 FPS, but they don't make a lot of 4K. I mean, they do, but they don't. You can't go to Target and buy a 120 hertz 4K TV unless you get lucky, right? Like, you really have to look, because a lot of the marketing when it comes to TVs is like, this is a 120 hertz TV. And then you find out that that's not true at all. It's just smooth motion, and that it's actually only 60 hertz. You really have to do some hunting, where 2K 165 hertz, 144 hertz monitors are very common. And so this is just them saying they should have shipped with 1440p, so I don't know why they didn't.
Yeah.
But the fact that that exists now is just making it where people are like, okay, I can play these competitive games at high refresh rates on my gaming monitor
better
without
late
having
than
to hunt down some. Yeah, exactly.
No, that's cool. I used to totally just be just like a farm animal when it came to like recognizing refresh rates and frame rates and stuff. And gradually I've kind of like, and again, this is, I think if I see something side by side, I'd be like, well, obviously, but I wouldn't think too hard about it. And, you know, incidentally, I also have the, I don't know, the reflexes of like a sedated sloth or something, but, yeah, I don't know, like playing Fallen Order, I have it in performance mode, and I was like, oh, I want to see more pretty grass or whatever, and I bumped it down to, you know, sexual graphics mode or whatever it's called, and it was just immediate. I was like, ooh, I don't want to see this. I can't look at it. And yeah, it's just, at this point, I'm like, no, it's got to be, I want that frame rate. I want that smoothness.
To me, it's just all about feel. And when they have to cap graphics like that, you know, they're essentially adding VSync. They don't call it stuff like that in consoles, because it's like most of the time people get a console because they don't want to deal with the like PC graphical side of things. But that's all they're becoming, is they're just giving you the PC options finally. And I love it.
It's a childproof PC. It's just exactly.
It really is.
Now, in addition to the you know, VRR 1440p, and again, there's like four or five people who are just angrily writing comments about how I besmirched the name of their beloved resolution, and I'm sorry, I was just kidding. Anyway, they also added voice chat for Discord, which is cool because a lot of people communicate using Discord. We're actually talking to each other on Discord now, I think, which is great. We should do next week on a PS5. I think so. So that's cool. That's good. There's also, speaking of voice related things, they're doing a beta of voice controlled captures, which is cool. If I always forget the PS5 has voice commands on it, assuming you have your mic unmuted.
I never used anything like that on PS5. So,
I mean, I used to use it fairly regularly on my Xbox. I would be like, Xbox, record that. Because it was just the quickest way to, when something cool happens, like, oh, let me get that last 30 seconds and just say that. So I'm happy that this is coming. I haven't got a chance to test it out yet, but I'm excited for that.
No, it's cool. It's a good sort of, you don't wind up fumbling with buttons and share controls and all that. It's also, you know, it's whatever. It's a good addition, I guess. I always love that, like, when they announce this, like, list of, like, features they're adding, it's like, oh, I forgot they had that. This is such a weird one. The wireless controller can now get updates wirelessly. So you don't have to
thank
plug
gosh.
It in. Yeah.
I know. I'm actually very happy about that. I had a controller that was needed an update for probably 3 months, and I just refused to get up and plug it in to update it.
Because
I had a charging dock, so like it would just
sit
in the dock. Yeah.
Everybody has, I don't know if it'll show up on my camera, everybody has this charging dock, which isn't hooked up to your PS5 at all. Oh, there it is. Right there. It's the charging dock. Everybody has that. And that's not hooked up to your PS5. That's just, okay, get me off full screen. I don't like it. that's not hooked up to your PS5 at all. That's just plugged into the wall. So it's getting power to your controller, but it's not communicating with the PS5. And so it would just be like, it needs to update. And I'd just be like, no. And my friend was like, dude, Mark, it takes a minute. And I'm like, I don't care.
Exactly.
I have to hunt down a cord. No, I don't care.
Hey, you know what? I don't have that dock, all right? And I'm one of those losers that is always charging it through the PS5.
It in?
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. You know what? I think it's not a big deal, all right?
Sony, get this man a dock.
Can we start a GoFundMe for Josh to get him?
No, I don't want one. I don't want one. No. At this point, it's a principle thing. I don't want it. I don't want it.
I have my PS5 wall mounted really high up, and then I have a 3-foot USB cable, and so the controller just hangs down. It's like a pull string. I just let it dangle there delicately. Not really.
Yeah.
I do have a wall mounted.
I was like, there's no way.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It is Max. It could be.
Yeah. my PS5 is painted to look like the Ford Explorers from Jurassic Park for reasons I'm still unclear of. Anyway, you can also now select individual screenshots to send to your app as opposed to having to just automatically transfer them all, which is cool if you want to keep track
love
of.
Love it.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like this one. There's the friends who play tile. So now you can make fun of your friends if they play embarrassing games, or maybe go play games with them you didn't know that they were into, which is, you know, nice little, you know, bonus thing in there.
What is that?
It's like a tile when you like, when you're looking, when you go over a game, it says like, it shows your friends that also play a specific game. So you know,
I already did that.
Does it
if you like, if you're hovering on the game itself, like there sometimes will be a tile there, but it's not if there was like, hey, game hints and trophies, and this video just came out because this thing is new and stuff like that. There wasn't always a tile for it, so I think it's going to be more of a regular.
Just like more
it's
prominent.
A new tile. Another cool. tile. Yeah. Right. We like tiles
finally.
Here. Now, this next one is good. There's a bunch of sort of migration improvements for people, you know, taking their stuff from PS4 to PS5, which kind of brings us to our next topic, which is that the PS5 is selling very well. We got a big old financial earnings call, what have you, and the... what was it? Q3, I guess. It was basically the 3 months that ended on December 31st, 2022. 7.1 million PS5s were sold during those 3 months, which is... That's good. Good job, Sony. Keep it up.
Good for them.
That's huge. That is a 34% increase year on year. They've had 32 million units shipped since launch. There were 12.8 million PS5 sold during the 2022 financial year. A lot of this comes down to supply chain stuff and the fact that there was, you know, a hardware shortage and chip shortage or what have you. And it's kind of cool that, you know, they were like, the shortage is over. And then they were like, but no, really, it is. Here it is. So,
yeah, I was on the store the other day pre-ordering my PSVR 2. And there was just all the models were in there except for the digital. Mm-hmm. But like they had bundles and then they had the disc version without bundles as well.
I'm starting to have a theory about the digital one, but I also agree. You can go on Amazon and you can just buy a PS5, but I also went to a Target and it was like, there's three at your store. It's like, you'll never see them in the case. And I noticed that it's like, they're never just out. And I had tweeted about how I've never seen one in a store, and everybody that responded that was like, oh, I work at Walmart, I work at Target. They were like, we just don't put them out. Like, if you ask for them, we'll go get it, but like we just don't take the time to put them out because they usually just get sold super fast. But it was insane that I could just do the like little Target order pickup thing and just be like, I want a PS5. Now to my digital theory, I don't think that was a console Sony ever intended to make, because you just cannot find them. I think that they went, oh my gosh, the Series S is $300, we need to make something at least close, and Jim Ryan just took a baseball bat and started beating a PS5, and he was like, okay, the disc drive came off, still working. Okay, what else? Okay, it needs a motherboard. So we don't need the disc drive. We know that now. So quickly just put one out that doesn't have a disc drive and that they don't really intend on making anymore, because you just, you cannot find them.
That's an interesting point, because the sort of argument I always thought that existed for it was that like, oh, in this case, it completely eliminates the possibility of used games. You were entirely locked to buying things off of PSN. So... you know, Sony gets 100% of your profit or money or whatever, you know, like, and it's, you know, that's good for them. I don't know how big of the sort of, you know, contingent of people who are still buying physical games. I realized, I don't know. It was a few weeks ago. I realized I don't think I'd physically held a PS5 game because, you know, I've seen them behind glass at like Target or whatever, but it's weird to sort of, like, I think that we saw one, there was someone floating around the office and I was like, weird. I haven't actually, it's kind of that slow realization. Like, oh, right. That used to be commonplace. We've got this giant library here at the IGN office of all of the review copies of games. And it's kind of organized generation by generation. And it's hilarious because it goes from like the Wii era which is like, there's just a crap load of Wii games because they were just, you know, shovelware. And then there's like 360, because it was frequently like the lead platform for review copies. And then it was like PS3. And then it's like PS4 and Xbox One. And then it's like, that's it?
That's it.
Yeah, there's no shelf for that. The rest is just all, you know, download code. So it's weird to see it in person. Speaking of, I guess, digital entertainment, as we're prone to on this particular show, one thing you can't really buy physically, maybe you can in some cases, is games as a service. And we are kind of hitting the point where games as a service are shutting down left and right, which is sort of a bummer. Honestly, I don't know. I feel like it was kind of inevitable. I don't think this is taking too many people by surprise. But basically, over the course of the last few months, we've seen Avengers kind of, you know, shut down more or less. It's still playable, but it's like they're pretty much like, we're not here. Have all the free crap. Go nuts. You know, play with your friends or whatever. They're just, you know, not pulling the plug per se, but definitely kind of closing up shop to a certain degree.
Are they not? I can't remember. I thought they did have an end date, didn't they?
Oh, I don't know about like actually taking servers offline. They're done adding new content.
Yeah.
And they're going to be making everything free, which is awesome for, you know, fans. Sure. And then anybody who's playing regularly is going to still get rewarded with resources in the form of whatever currency that they earn in the meantime.
Dude, six people are stoked right now to hear that.
Meanwhile, Meanwhile, there's other games as a service that are just getting like full on just nuked. Rumbleverse, Epic is killing off this. It was the battle royale. It was like wrestling focus. I played a little bit of it. It was like really, really funny, like really kind of charming. It sort of reminded me of like an open world Rampage in a sense. And that came out less than 6 months ago, and they are just, you know, pulling the plug for that one and offering refunds for people who paid for it, which is just like, well, that sucks, you know, like that. Again, we talk about, you know, games are a time sink, but like a lot of people had to work really hard to make this. A lot of people probably sunk a lot of time into it, and now it's just kind of like, well, for what, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge bummer. Like, I feel like with the world of mobile gaming as it is, I've never heard of really mobile games that shut down. I mean, besides Apex Mobile, which is a thing, but like they're going to keep those up forever because people are always going to be paying for something on there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's weird seeing like so many of these games as a service, like shutting down.
Well, you mentioned mobile. EA announced that Apex Mobile, I guess, is shutting down, and Battlefield Mobile, which, you know, there was, we're definitely guilty of not covering mobile stuff as much as we should at IGN. Like we focus primarily on, you know, console and PC stuff. And that's, there's a huge, huge market out there. There's a massive swath of people who just play on mobile, and it's a bummer that there, you know, anybody who is really into that doesn't have that to look forward to anymore. Knockout City, another one, which is honestly, I feel like very similar to Rumbleverse. That was the sort of dodgeball focused one, which was, which was cool. Again, like I sort of dabble, like the recurring theme here is you talk to people and they're like, yeah, I played with that for a few weeks and then, you know, it's all right. I didn't stick with it. And it's like, that's exactly the problem. You know, I think it's especially if it's a free to play thing that gets sort of revealed as one of those, like it's available now and people go mess with it for a weekend. And, you know, unless it has like really good at sinking its hooks into you or like a really consistent, you know, cadence of content drops and also an active community, it's kind of hard to maintain that momentum. And yeah,
I think I played Knockout City two or three times. One or two of them was with Jada, and we were like, man, this is,
I played it.
Yeah. And we were like, man, this is actually like really fun. I like this game a lot. And then never played it again.
IGN gave it a 9 out of 10. Like
It's good. It's such a great game.
It's really good. Yeah, it's really fun.
I mean, it's...
And then why weren't you guys playing it?
I don't know.
It's your fault.
For me, I played it twice with Mark, and I played it once on my own, and I didn't enjoy it on my own. The only time I enjoyed playing it is when I was playing with people I knew or acquaintances of people that I knew. Like, and that was, for me, there just wasn't enough people on my friends list and people that I knew personally that were playing it to get me to play this. So
yeah, I mean, I'm kind of experiencing that right now with like Dead by Daylight, right? Like I recently jumped into it and with some friends who've been playing it a lot, and I was like, whoa, this is actually really fun. I'm super late to this. And then we haven't played it. And so I tried playing it by myself and it was the same deal. I was like, oof, this is not, it's so tough. We've said it before on this podcast, just earlier, which was just, you know, video games, time is your biggest commodity. And when you get a live service game, you really need to understand what you're signing up for. I recently started playing ESO, Elder Scrolls Online, and I played it for a night and I was like, no, like this is fine. I like this, but there's no way I'm going to sink my time into this. Like that. You're not getting that from me. And they don't need people to just sink their time. They also need people to sink their money in as well. And
is ESO still subscription based or is that just free to play entirely? I can't even keep track of like
it's free to play on Game Pass. I think if you want to play on PlayStation, you have to pay for it.
Sure.
And then of course it has all of its expansions and
That
stuff, which you have to pay for those.
Yeah.
But there's no like monthly service. I think it's one of those like you can subscribe and you get like extra stuff per month.
Yes. Yeah. They give you like a bunch of like currency and like other stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is to see this happen with games as a service. Like we already saw this happen left and right with like MMORPGs. We saw this happen with, you know, sort of tacked on multiplayer, you know, shooter components. And Yeah, now I guess it's, we saw that with a lot of free-to-play stuff, and now it's sort of games as a service, which is, you know, kind of a blanket term for a lot of these things, but it feels, you know, a lot of things that were sort of chasing that success of Fortnite and being like, they're not, you know, it's not a plan to like, this is the thing we're going to have at launch, it's ready to go. It's kind of, you got to have this, you're building a highway, not a, you know, not a store. Now, there's also
really interested for like Last of Us factions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Sony has this, these very grand plans of launching a bunch of live service games. And it's landscapes. Genshin Impact and Fortnite. Like those are the games that are like thriving right now. But if you're not those.
Yeah. Sony has, they have 10 live service games that aim to launch by 2026. So
fuck a market out there. Yeah, I think it's, if you're not going to have a game like Genshin or Fortnite where you can really have something to sink your teeth into, I don't know if these large games can like really work as games as a service. Like, I think people are maybe aiming too high. Like, again, I keep thinking, I'm like going back to mobile games and like, why do those like stick around? Why are they so successful? And like, I think maybe they're just, you know, low investment time. Like thinking about like Marvel Snap even, right? It's so just pick up and play. You don't have to play for a long time. And that's just enough to get you hooked, right? But when we're talking about like Knockout City or Rumbleverse, like it's these very Fortnite-esque Battle Royale games, right? Where you have to sit down, wait to join a game, and then you're there for a bit. And I don't know, it seems like, in order for this model to work, you have to have the lowest barrier to entry as possible. And I don't know if these games that we've mentioned, like, you know, pick that up yet. I wonder if Sony is going to have something like that. But for now, I don't see anything like that would work.
I think we're all also outing how little friends we all have.
Also true. Yeah. Well, it's hard to get a bunch of friends to play the same game. Like that's, it's so hard.
I only have one friend on this podcast right now, and I'll let you guys figure out who it is. But you know, you guys can fight.
But that's a key thing though, is that like these aren't just games; they have to be social networks too,
right?
And I don't know. That's such a weird. It's such a weird thing to think about. And it's an ecosystem, not just a single product, not just a, you know. I don't know. Well,
I feel so bad saying it, but I've had people like hit me up, and they're like, "Hey, do you want to play this weekend?" And I'm like, "It is Tuesday." Like, yes, I would love to play with you this weekend, but that is so far away. One of us can get sick. You know, we're all married. One of us may have plans spring up. Like, it is so hard to commit to. It's really hard to wake up in the morning and somebody's like, you want to play a game tonight? And I'm like, I'm going to throw down the hardest maybe possible because I don't know how I'm going to feel 8 hours from now.
It's like a real social gathering. Like it's the same feeling of like committing to going out for beers or something. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, if we still want to go out for games that has, you know, that's still alive, we can go play Anthem together if you guys want to do that.
Did you just steal my joke from the meeting? Josh, I love you.
I don't know
so
what
you're
talking. You had 10 minutes to make that joke.
I was like,
all right?
I'm not gonna, I'm gonna I gave I you the opening. Made the joke. Yes, EA has kept the Anthem servers alive and well. This is the future of EA.
Yeah.
You know the whole like the whole Field of Dreams, like if you build it, they will come. Like that's like Anthem is like if that dude put out Home Plate and called it a day. Like, you know, it's just like
that's their plan. EA's just shutting down all their live service games. Like you're about to have nothing
left to
be a freelancer in Anthem. You have no other choice. Get in here.
How many people are playing Anthem right now? What do you guys think?
Oh, do you remember when they left up Christmas decorations?
Yes.
Like they had a holiday drop and they had like Christmas lights all over like the hub world and then they left them up until like March. I was like, did Anthem get divorced? Is it okay in there?
That's something I want to ask the audience right now. Is this happening in real life too? Because I live in like a suburban neighborhood and if you go out at night, there are still February 7th people with their Christmas lights up. Just unplug them if you're not going to take them down. Super weird that they're just like
there's a car in my neighborhood that has like the dude basically it's like a Prius and he got those like little clips you use to mount like LED wires or I guess Christmas lights and put them all over the car and then for like you know 4 or 5 weeks, 3 weeks around Christmas, he carefully puts Christmas lights all over it and drives the car around with Christmas lights on it. And the rest of the year, there's just these little like white hooks all over the car. And I'm like, it's a choice.
It's great.
Now, while we're talking about games that are dying and whatnot, this is a Crossfire X, which was the, that is, so I think a lot of people were like, what is that? It came out of nowhere. That is a continuation of a shooter. It's like, it's from South Korean PC shooter. Crossfire X was supposed to be like it, you know, breaking in on consoles, and apparently that didn't take off so hot. But yeah, the original one has been going since like 2007, I think. I think they've had a couple updates that also, I believe, cleans up on mobile if they've got a mobile version. But yeah, they made, wasn't that like they got Remedy to do the single player?
Yeah, there was a single player and a multiplayer, and we reviewed them both, and they both reviewed very poorly. The multiplayer,
one got a two and got a three.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. The multiplayer in general, specifically, I think we gave a two because it's just, it is a broken mess that doesn't feel good to play. Yikes. That is such a funny review that I very, very highly encourage people to go watch because it's really funny.
Like Dan Stapleton, our reviews editor, put up a neat column the other day about sort of why IGN gives so many sevens, and like you know, there's definitely like a bizarre curve there. And it used to be I think we just reviewed a lot more crap, and there was also a lot more crap. And now at this point, games are so expensive to make that if you're going to make a game, you kind of go to the trouble of making sure it's its least playable, it's least decent. And that's not always the case. Still, you occasionally get those, you know, those duds out there, but you know, for the most part, it's like, yeah, you know, it's six is okay, seven is good, you know, eight is great, nine is excellent, amazing. And 10 is a masterpiece, Italian chef kiss. Another one that, this is where I feel like the knee-jerk reaction to hear that something is ending support makes it sound like, uh-oh, they're killing this game. But was it Turtle Rock Studios announced that Back 4 Blood is going to end support? And my first thought was like, whoa, guess that didn't pan out. But in reality, it's like it got multiple like DLC updates, got a bunch more maps, it got like additional characters. Mm-hmm. The game came out in what, 2021, 2020, something? It's been out for
I think it was 2021. Yeah. I can't remember exactly.
But it was like October of 2021.
Yeah, but it got a decent tail on there. You know, I know people were kind of mixed on it. It wasn't the sort of Left 4 Dead revival that everyone was hoping for, but it got like way more post-launch content than games used to back in the day, you know, like it was and it's kind of funny that we're so conditioned to expecting this like really long tail, this like this big roadmap of like new stuff to come to a game. And you know, I guess this did fine. I mean, they're onto their next project, you know. It's almost it's unfair to expect a studio to just stick with one game forever. Like I think a lot of studios still just want to make something new. They want to, you know, get it out the door and move on.
Their statement was very similar to the devs who made that Portal like game Splitgate, which is like a competitive game, and they've basically said the same thing where they're like, we're ending support because we want to make our new thing. Now, you know, you're gonna have people like Epic that are just like, they would be fools to leave Fortnite behind, right? So you have to kind of read between the lines, and it's like, if you are ending support to go make your next thing, there is a chance that it's because this thing isn't working out as much as you wanted it to. But I also, I don't fault them at all that they're like, okay, we made this, and you can only squeeze blood from a stone so much before you need to just move on and
find
come up with
stone.
Something new.
I'm really, I can't wait to play GTA 5 on PlayStation 6 and Xbox Series V or whatever the next one is.
That's right.
Now, there's also a bunch more here. Babylon's Fall, that was one of the first PS5 games that, there was the Grasshopper manufacturer, like kind of Souls-like MMO, Let It Die, which ironically, they aren't letting it die exactly.
I did that. I let it die.
this is such a weird, so they have put it on, I don't know, they've put it in a medically induced coma or something. The development and operations teams have made the decision to temporarily suspend the game services while we redevelop Death Averse Let It Die. So they're not letting it die yet, maybe. They're putting it back in the oven or something. Yikes. I don't know what the euphemism is here, but that was one I really wanted to love it. It's such a it's Suda51 and doing a Souls-like in weird post-apocalyptic Tokyo with like skateboarding death wearing like x-ray glasses. There's so much cool stuff in this game to like. The entire like the map is looks like the Peter Bruegel painting of the Tower of Babel. Like it's just I want to love it. I also it's just I don't know. I didn't love playing it. Yeah. Now, we did talk about a bunch of these games that are sad and going away. Beyond Community, let us know, what are you sad is going away? What game do you wish would go away? What game do you want to pull the plug on?
What game do you wish they would shut the servers off?
Be positive. I don't know. I guess it's sort of like what keeps you sticking around with the game? Let us know. Now, this episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Shifting gears here, Jada, you've had a chance to properly field test the DualSense Edge controller. Can you tell us a little bit about...
She played it in a park.
It's a controller, guys. It's got buttons. It's got analog sticks. They added some new buttons. The battery's worse. There you go. No, but seriously, the I really like my DualSense Edge. I've harped about a lot about Forspoken in the last couple episodes, but this controller makes Forspoken such even better of a game to play because it adds extra buttons that you can use to cycle through your spells, which means you can chain spells and combo easier and faster. I'm not saying go buy this controller to play Forspoken and it's going to make the game a 10 out of 10. Not going to say that. It honestly, Forspoken was...
You can imply it. Are you...
I could imply it, yes.
Are you implying? Whoa.
I'm implying
Whoa.
It, yes.
All right.
Forspoken is a 10 out of 10. Send me money, Square Enix. Yeah. No, I really like the controller for it. Forspoken for me was like a solid 8 out of 10 game. Like that's... I couldn't think I could go higher than that. But I love the game. The controller's great. A lot of people are really concerned because there was a breakdown. People went into it and saw like, hey, this battery is a lot smaller and therefore we're getting less, battery life out of controllers. I'm still getting on average about 7 hours on my per battery, charge, using the charge stand and everything. And that's a solid gameplay session. That's if you're putting a full day into playing a game, like you got a new game and you're going to sit down and play it, like, 7 hours is a long time to sit and play a single game without stopping and charging your controller. So I think if, your settings are set right, I have my lights dimmed as much as possible. Vibration is turned to like medium. Sometimes I turn it up when in between the sessions. And then the haptic trigger sensitivity, you can adjust with that. That's all that stuff is going to affect your battery life. If you have everything set to max, yeah, your controller will probably die in about 5 hours would be my guess. I haven't done a full test on that portion yet because I've been playing other games where I don't want all that stuff fully turned up right now. But I like it. It's a good controller. It's solid. It feels nice and weighty. I really love all the different functions that they add with the function buttons to be able to swap between profiles. It's a little hard to see. It's black on black, but you know.
How do the buttons feel, like the face buttons? Like, do they feel different? Do the joysticks feel different than the regular DualSense?
They feel, honestly, so the triggers themselves have like little raised edges. Like there's little like grips on the triggers themselves, which feels really good. I really like that aspect of it. The face buttons feel solid. They feel just like they like the other DualSense regular controller. Actually, I got the regular one right next to me. Yeah, honestly, they feel a little sturdier, if that makes sense.
No, it does, because I've tried to explain it. I got the Elite Series 2, the core one, but it's, you know, it's just an Elite Series 2. It just didn't come with the back paddles. Gotta buy them separate. And I've had people ask, like, what, you know, what's the difference? And I'm like, I don't know, you just have to hold it. Like, it does feel different. You move the joysticks, you press the buttons, and it feels like a quality controller. 200's a little too much for me for the Edge, but
it is, yeah, it is definitely, it's not for everybody. I think it's for professional, like, game players that are, like, playing in, like, tournaments and stuff like that, and you want to have that extra, like, customization when you're playing, especially if you're playing, like, Apex on PC or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, the better your controller is, if you're playing with controller on PC, which some professionals do, the better your controller, you know, the more options you have, the better off you're going to be. So I think it's definitely that aspect of it. It's for the people who are, you know, the real hardcore audience into the gaming. I don't think this is a casual pickup for anybody. I think it's a cool, like, I'm ready to splurge. I need a new controller and I don't want to have to deal with, you know, stick drift, which is actually one of the things I really love about this controller is, let me see if I can get this to trigger real quick. Hit the little release in the back.
I just realized.
As simple as that.
Oh, look at that.
And then you can just simply flick that guy up. And
voila. So, yeah, you can swap out the joysticks.
For our audience listener, yeah. or our audio listeners, Jada just destroyed her DualSense on camera.
I have no idea how to put it back together. That was $200 well spent.
She voided her warranty on camera.
Please view this video and subscribe to my Patreon that's called Buy Jada a New Controller so she can break another one. But no, I love it because I've had an issue with stick drift on like two or three of my controllers now. And this is hopefully a way for me to avoid that in the future of having to spend $70 every time one of my analog sticks decides that it wants to look at the ceiling.
I mean, Mark, to your point about, you know, PS5 becoming more like PC, like this is, you know, it's childproof going under the hood. Yeah. I think it's such a funny, like, that's the solution for stick drift, is removing the entire stick assembly, like having to pop that entire, I mean, $20 for a replacement I would expect a lot worse, but So in high school, I was like, completely opposed to getting an iPod because the whole deal where, like, once the battery was dead, you had to, like, pay to have it replaced or whatever. And so I got a Creative Labs Nomad Zen Jukebox Extra or something, which had, like, a battery that could pop out. But
I had one of those.
Yeah, it was cool. But I wound up, like, somebody jumped on my back and I dropped the entire thing and it fried the hard drive before I wound up ever needing to change the battery out, which is sort of like a... like a little bit of a quandary there, you know, like I guess people will definitely put this thing through its paces. I'm just curious. We talk about the battery life being short. How long will it take before it gets stick drift? And is that justified? Like, I guess it's sort of nice to have that exit route to be like, oh, my stick drift on my $200 controller is here. I only have to pay $20 to get a new one. That's cool. Again, it just sort of seems like kind of a almost overkill solution to that.
It definitely is. And you know, the parts definitely aren't a $20 cost part. So it's definitely, you could probably, if you bought the stuff yourself to replace an analog stick in a regular DualSense, probably could get the parts for around $10, maybe. So
the controller is nearly half the price of the console. That's just what I can't wrap my head around.
It's got a carrying case.
Oh, yeah. Never mind then.
And like, I think it's
why
like
didn't
a,
you why didn't you lead with that?
And a very long charge cable, because you can't get large charge cables anywhere, Mark. They're exclusive to this controller.
Got it. I didn't know I couldn't get one on Amazon for $8.99.
But no, I love the controller.
Did you miss me, Jada? I'm back.
I missed you so much, Mark. Yes. But you know, this will be definitely the last show we'll have you on this year, probably.
Sounds good.
Well, Jada, thank you for putting that through its paces. Like, would I guess you bought two of them, right? Or did you? What am I?
I only got one.
Okay.
I only picked up one of them. Yeah. Okay. I need to get a second one for my partner because he really likes it. So
okay.
I need to buy a second one. So, yeah, so I'm buying effectively a third PlayStation 5 for our house, like Mark said.
You were putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak. So I was going to say, like, would you buy one? But you did. So, like, that's a moot point. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I took one home for the weekend and I played with it a little bit, but it was kind of almost overwhelming. And like, I'm of sort of two minds of this, where I guess it's great if you want to like really fine tune everything and you know exactly how, if you know exactly what you want the input to feel like, good. But at the same time, the amount of effort it takes to pinpoint that for me is, it's probably quicker to just get used to whatever it is I'm using.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know, which is the cheaper option. I don't, you know. Yeah.
One of the things I'm hoping we get updates later is being able to bind multiple buttons to the same button, to where you can have like, I want L2 and R2 both on L2 and stuff like that, just because that'll just, you know, open up more options for different things in games. Especially if you like to play fighting games on controllers, sometimes you can only do so much with the remapping and stuff for those controller players. But yeah, no, I like it. I think it's solid. Probably a solid 7-8 as well for me, out of 10 on the IGN scale is what I'd probably give it.
Cool. I like, you're optimistic, but not too optimistic. Everything's an 8. 7 is too low. 8, good. Keep great job, everybody.
That's why we had to make that video for Jada. She just gives everything a 7.
I give everything.
Everything's actually, coming up 7s.
I think I've reviewed 2 things in my IGN time so far, and I've given both things 8. So we'll see what the next thing gets. Let's see if I break the streak.
Perfect.
All right, so shifting gears here, we're going to talk about something that really doesn't matter what kind of controller you use, which is a television show, which is the HBO Last of Us show, which, are we all caught up on this?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, well, so for anybody listening or watching who isn't caught up on this, fast forward like 9 minutes, and then you can hear about Gran Turismo on PSVR 2. But in the meantime, let's talk about episode 4, which was... yeah, I don't know.
It opens with like that magazine scene, right? That a lot of people were like, oh man, I wish they had the magazine scene in episode 3.
Episode 3, yep.
Yeah.
This was nice.
Yeah, it was a shorter episode compared to last week. Last week, I think, was almost an hour and a half. This one was, I always like to see what it is, and I think it was like 48 minutes, which was a very acceptable amount of time of television. but I liked it. No zombies or no, whatever, the infected.
Yeah,
infected.
They hinted at it. Yeah, whatever is bubbling underneath the floor there in that one scene.
Oh, yeah, that'll be cool. But I haven't got to talk about this show on a podcast at all, but I am, like, enthralled. It's a streaming show that you can watch whenever you want, and I 100%, it airs here in California, where we all are, it airs at 6 p.m. on Sundays, and I am there on my couch waiting for the episode to pop. That's how it's been every week so far, and I love it a lot, and I thought this episode was very, very good, especially because it has the dad jokes, and mm-hmm. that is a big part of The Last of Us, and they killed it. They killed it. It's very, very good.
I
totally forgot about the dad jokes bit, actually. Like, I forgot that was in the game, and then when I saw it in the show, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a thing. And I think they worked it in pretty well. And it, like, you see Joel kind of like loosening up to Ellie in the show, and it's done very well. I really liked it.
That we're finally starting to see a little bit of the softening of Joel when it comes to him and Ellie, and the last dad joke she does up in the building where they just kind of like lose it. I'm like, here we go. Like, this is, for people who aren't familiar with the game, this is what a lot of people who are familiar with the game, this is what we're waiting for, is that kind of father-daughter kind of bonding moments, and it's getting there.
There's an interesting thing they've been doing with Joel, which is, I think you kind of have to do it because there's no player agency. Like, there's no sense of attachment to him because you're controlling him. Like, he's much more of a sort of, you know, static character of his own, you know, motives and all that. And they make him a lot meaner in a lot of ways. Like he's a lot more walled off. Like I think I've mentioned this, but like, you know, early on in the game, he's kind of like, all right, Ellie, get in the truck. We're heading out of here. And he's like, he's not really like that mean to her early on. He's like a little bit weird, but like he's distant. He's never like outright a jerk. And in the show, he's horrible. Yeah. He's really mean to her. And then, you know, and then he gradually kind of softens up. And I think you really have to have that because there is that level of detachment. And on the flip side of that, you also, I mean, what the game does is it kind of flips things by being like, oh, you're a monster. You killed all these people. You are a bad person and you should feel bad. Like, that's kind of an integral part to being Joel. And like, that's, it's true. You killed a lot of people playing through this game. Like, that's how that works. It's very much like, I mean, I feel like in The Last of Us 2, where you sneak up behind someone who's playing Hotline Miami, the game that asks you if you like killing people, and then you hit them over the head with a hammer, is like, oh, I remember, I understand that reference. But in this case, like, you don't have that. It's like someone else is playing as Joel. And I think this is the first episode where we got him beating the crap out of that guard with his bare hands in the first or second episode.
You didn't like that dude anyway, right? Like,
exactly. Yeah. And you're kind of rooting for him. And then in this one, it's like, there's, you know, the dude, Brian or whatever, who Ellie shoots in the spine, and Joel basically, he didn't really have to kill him. You know, like the guy was maybe going to bleed out, but at the same, like maybe, like you can look at this two ways. Like maybe this guy is suffering and Joel's like, oh, I've got to put him out of his misery. But maybe he's like, this guy's going to be a rat. We got to kill him so we can cover our tracks. But either way.
Yeah, well, because the people don't know who they're looking for. They don't know that they're looking for, you know, a middle-aged guy and a girl. So that was his way of kind of eliminating that threat. But something I think one of the most, like, cruel moments I've seen from Joel, to go off your point, Max, was at the end of episode 3 when, you know, she mentioned something about Tess and he's just like, we don't talk about Tess. Like, he gets, like, super, super, like, mean with her. I have not played the game in like a minute, so I can't remember exactly, but I feel like the show, because they're trying to develop the characters a lot more than they do with the game, is they're really trying to push the Joel and Tess relationship a lot more than they ever did with the game. And so they're really, really trying to convey how much he's hurting from the fact that, like, he took on this job to deliver, you know, Ellie, and lost someone he loves in the process in the form of Tess. I don't feel like that is driven home as much in the game as it is being in the show. And so it's hitting him harder, and it's making him be a lot more like cruel. It's like he's taking it out on her specifically, because in his mind, his only way to cope is, well, you're the reason I've now lost her, is because I'm having to transport you. And so I think that could account a little bit for the mood change between the game and the show.
It makes it more understandable. Yeah,
but I also think that's the beauty of us getting it in TV form. You know, we're getting more nuance to these characters. We're taking, you know, these characters that were one element of them may have been very minimized or one-dimensional, and they're expanding it, and we're getting these great stories that fill in more about these characters that many fans have come to love. You know, when we met Bill in the game, like, it was like, okay, he was a, you know, he's a prepper, a survivalist, and he was a crotchety old man that, you know, hated people. And Frank despised him because of, you know, how rigid he was.
And closed off. And
And he went off, and, you know, and then we got that. That's why there's that big difference in the letter from episode three and in the game. Whereas now we're getting these huge, just like really built out experiences and learning more about these characters. And I love that about the show. I think also one of the things, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how we're also getting that in episode 4, where with this new group that has taken over this town that overthrew Fedra, like, we're learning more about this group. Because in the game, it's just like, oh, they're hunting for people. You don't know who they're hunting for, kind of like now. But also, they were just a faceless group.
Part of that is to justify that you're going to have to kill a whole lot of them and throw bottles at their heads and stuff. Like, in this case, you're kind of seeing, like, Kathleen, the Melanie Lynskey character.
Yeah.
She's intense. Like, she's a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Again, this is sort of the first part of a two-parter. Like, it definitely sets stuff up. I don't want to say too much because I've seen ahead. But, like, as far as I was really, really kind of skeptical about them adding in original characters or adding in new characters and sort of padding it out. But I think they've done it in a very I don't know, prudent way. Like it's very, very tasteful,
feels more
very
organic. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which I mean, you'd hope so, because it's the, you know, it's the creator has, you know, getting his own say on that. But yeah,
well, and also it's just, and this is my big thing with episode three. Like this is not the game. Like they are retelling the game in such an awesome way, but like also it's a show that they are trying to reach a mass audience with, right? Like in the game, the run truck that I just happened to be on screen when I said those words, is a boss. They can't do that for a show. So it's right. Like, you know, they got to change stuff up, and I'm liking it a lot.
I was going to say in the Bill and Frank episode, there's something that I just, mm-hmm. just occurred to me is like, it's what they did with it is kind of like when you take a really sad song and give it like an upbeat twist, which is exactly mm-hmm. what Frank does with that Linda Ronstadt song.
Oh,
like he's playing at the piano and he's giving this like cheery mm-hmm. thing, and Bill's like, no, don't do it like that. And he pushes him aside and then does like the down right. somber version. And it's like, I mean, it's so funny because like, that's what we got. Like what the opening, the credits for the first episode were like a really somber version of like a Depeche Mode song, or maybe it was right. the second, but you know, it, the same deal of like, let's doing a more somber cover or doing a more upbeat cover. And like, that's kind of the weird remix that we got with episode three. And I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I really, when I look for an adaptation, right. It's like whether it's like Cowboy Bebop or the Power Rangers movie or whatever, I don't really care too much about how, I don't know why those two came to my head, but I see them as like song covers, you know, like mm-hmm. it is just the same thing, but put into a new format. And it's like, I'm very interested to see what changes and what doesn't. For example, like I think in this show, the theme of violence and the theme of the consequences of violence is pushed a lot harder than it was in the first game. The first game, you get a little bit of that at some point. I think it's like David's crew is like, yo, mm-hmm. this is the guy that killed all our dudes. And you're like, oh mm-hmm. shit. Like these guys aren't just faceless enemies anymore. There's a consequence to this.
Mm-hmm.
But that you get that kind of later in the game, right? In the show, they're pushing this early now, which I really like. And it is very like Last of Us Part II-esque as well, with the death of that guy who's begging for his life. And mm-hmm. it hits so much harder. Like I remember the ambush scene in the game, and I was really like, I knew, you know, they were going to adapt it because you can see it in the trailer. I was like, man, it's going to be a crazy violent action sequence. And it was like kind of whatever. Mm-hmm. He just like shoots guys with a rifle from far away and then another one off screen. And you're like, okay. But then that guy is like begging for his life. And you're like, oh, man, mm-hmm. this is very violent.
It's
and then
brutal.
And then they also shook up the order of events as well with Ellie, you know, saving Joel by killing a guy here. And that it was also another moment that I think is different from the games. Mm-hmm. I think after that moment in the games, Joel's like, all right, kid, you're legit. Let me show you how to shoot with a bigger gun now, like right after, right? And this show, like, they totally changed it. And Joel is like, look away, don't cry. Like, Ellie goes into a corner, wipes the tears away, buries all her like negative emotions about shooting a dude from point blank. And it really complicates the relationship early on. And I'm really like interested to see how they explore those themes in the show, because in the game, it felt very like, yeah, I'm Joel. I'm the hero. I get to kill everybody and save the girl. But in the show, it definitely feels messier.
Yep. Now we're at time right now, but I am dying to talk more about The Last of Us next week, because I don't know, next week's episode is a doozy. If you want more sort of recappy stuff mm-hmm. about The Last of Us, we do a show here at IGN called Cannon Fodder. I frequently host those or do my best to inject as many corny jokes in them as possible. Occasionally we have some cool Easter eggs and stuff, so go look that up. And now we have a chat with Ryan McCaffrey about the PlayStation VR 2 Gran Turismo 7 mode, maybe vice versa with that. But thank you all for joining me. This was a good time. And Mark, I like to think that we are now better friends, if not good friends, after this fun episode.
These 50 minutes have definitely I'm starting to come around.
Wow. My heart is warm. All right, here's the chat with the Ryan about the funny hat and the little cars. Check it out.
Hey everybody, Max here with Ryan McCaffrey. PlayStation VR 2 is out on February 22nd, and one of the big, albeit sort of under-talked about things that comes with it is a free update for Gran Turismo 7, which is the entire game in VR, and yeah. Ryan, you got a chance to check it out.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, Max. I went in just thinking, yeah, it'd be cool to just see GT7 in VR, free update. I love cars. I've enjoyed GT7. Sure, why not? I have to say, I came out like legit kind of blown away. Like, it is such a great fit for VR. I know it's not the first racing game to do VR, but it's the first major console racing game to do VR in a you know, easy couch way. It was actually my first time with PSVR 2, period. Mm-hmm. Fidelity's great, like, physically, like, the headset feels good, which I was expecting. So, all good on the tech side, but I told them, well, I used to have a DeLorean, so, yeah, can you load up the DeLorean for me? Because they do have one in the game. And it looks awesome in there. It's whatever one they scanned and modeled in the game, they did a pristine job building it. And then you can go to the VR showroom and actually, while you can't actually get up and literally like walk around your play space and walk around the car, you do use the thumbsticks to change angles. You can be in the cockpit of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is gonna sound stupid and ridiculous, and I'm okay with that. I'm putting myself out there. Having owned a DeLorean for 12 years, over thousands of hours, 50,000 miles, I drove that car. It really was like I was sitting in the car again. Like, I mean,
that's the idea. Like, that's the goal here. That's awesome.
I know it sounds, it's almost like it's like Sony fed me a line, but it's like they really
like Spider-Man.
They did not. Yeah. No, it's, I kind of needed a moment where I was like, because I sold the car 11 years ago, mm-hmm. so it's been a while since I've actually been in one, and I was like, whoa, like this is like
Chewy, we're home. Yeah,
it was really awesome. And so then I just started jumping into races. So I started with the DeLorean, then I moved to the Tesla Model S, which is another car. I have a family member that had one, so I've spent a lot of seat time in that car. And then I finished I was like, just give me a supercar. We loaded up a Lamborghini that I'll never get to sit in, let alone drive in real life. But starting with the DeLorean on the track, just the being able to, I know this sounds silly, but just being able to look over and see the other drivers and see the other cars is awesome. And even more ridiculous, but in a great way, is, you know, I know every inch of what a DeLorean looks like from the inside, from the outside, and just turning, just for fun, like, I'm gonna turn my head around to look out the back window, and it's all just perfect. You have the rear sunshade louvers of the car, and this game is meant to be a driving simulator. It always has been, and PSVR 2 absolutely takes that to a more awesome level. It is a perfect complement mm-hmm. to what GT7 already does. It enhances, and the fact that, you know, it's just a free update. I think if you have the slightest interest in cars, if you don't already own GT7 and you're buying a PSVR 2, you got to get this. I mean, it was just so great. And, all the side view mirrors work properly, which they do in every modern racing game now. And the rear view mirror, it's all fantastic. Like, it even fooled my body a little bit into like a sense of like that I'm in the car going. And I only noticed it because I noticed it when it broke, which was when I came too hard into a turn and had to slam on the brakes, and that's when my brain went, oh wait, my body here is not feeling like a physical sensation of slowing down quickly. And I was like, oh okay. On a couple of the courses have like big dips, little hills, and my stomach did do the like classic VR thing that happens to a lot of us of like, ugh, I didn't quite like that. But it plays perfectly. It's 100, I checked with Sony, 120 frames per second in each eye. So it's flying frame rate wise. It looks great. Jumping into the Tesla was equally awesome. They even have, this is like the dumbest little nitpick, but it's a 2012 Model S. So they have like the original, one of the first year ones, and they have the old UI. Like, the software UI in the car has been like redone four times, but they have the 2012 UI in the car. Again, this is all stuff that's in the existing regular PS5 TV screen version. But yeah, the bottom line, Max, is that the VR just, it really enhances this specific game in a way that I just wasn't expecting it to be, to really up my interest in GT7 as much as it did.
That's really like, VR will take something that is mundane or familiar and make it a completely new experience, and that's really cool to hear about this. And I think it was great that we sent you to go check this out because you're so familiar with a DeLorean or a Tesla. Yeah. Like, you're one of our go-to car guys. Can we talk a little bit about the actual PSVR 2 itself?
Sure.
What was your input on this? Was it the new controllers?
So they had me. I did a little with the DualSense. It does not seem to, or they gave me no indication that it uses I forget what they're calling them now, the new, you know, controllers, but it doesn't seem to use those. So it was DualSense, but then they actually had a full steering wheel and pedal set up, because it's like, does everybody have that? No, but do like hardcore GT7 guys that are willing to spend $600 on PSVR? Like, yes. So this is not an unrealistic scenario for a lot of people that are going to play GT7 and PSVR 2. So, you know, it was cool to have an actual wheel while I'm tearing down the track in the DeLorean. But tried it on the DualSense 2. Feels great. One thing I wasn't expecting is, inevitably I hit the wall a few times, and there is force feedback in the PSVR 2 itself. So I just hit the wall and get a little shake on the headset, which, being honest, it wasn't bad, but I don't think it really necessarily added a ton
of a gimmick than a proper immersion.
Yeah, I could do without it, but it's like, it's interesting that it's there, but worth mentioning nevertheless.
Nice. Now, one thing they've hyped up about the PSVR 2 is the sort of foveated rendering, where it basically, like, it keeps track of where you're looking, and it really puts all the rendering energy into those specific spots. Did you notice anything different about sort of what it was like to, you know, it's a weird question, like, when you're looking at what's going on in the VR headset?
Yeah.
Did anything jump out at you about that?
No, it looked, you know, no screen door effect, no, like, it played great. Like, in the menus, the static menus, you could see, like, it didn't look as clean and crisp as it does on a regular TV screen, but in the game, in motion, everything looks and plays phenomenally. So it was a solid first impression for me for PSVR 2, which I personally have pre-ordered. Like, I've got some money on the line for this. I don't know if I would have canceled my order if I'd been like completely disappointed in this or not. I don't know if it would have gone that far, but the fact that it, like, I was expecting the ergonomics of it to be good, because the ergonomics of PSVR 1 are really good. And yeah, I guess I haven't tried the proper new controllers, but the headset itself seems great, and just really awesomely surprised by how much VR added to GT7. So it's, from my own DeLorean experience, I can tell you that it really is probably the closest you'll get to sitting in your dream car. Like, I've had the pleasure of owning that dream car and seeing it in the game, and it was shocking in an amazing way of
That's
how one-to-one
so cool.
It was.
I mean, it's honestly, it's got to be like, you know, seeing an old friend or
going to your
old apartment or something.
It really was.
I think it's also kind of like, clearly there's, you know, the same attention of detail applied to all the different cars, but like, you know, DeLorean is, I'd say, more of a thing that appeals to a specific type of enthusiast, maybe more the pop culture crowd than like the true gearhead. But the fact
that they
commit just as much of detail to that that's huge.
Yeah.
As far as the headset, did anything, like, how was it weight-wise? How does it sort of feel compared to the original?
Seemed fine. They had these big giant headphones on me, which I like the PSVR 1, and I presume the 2, I think, has just the little earbuds it'll come with. So I think I would rather something like that than the big giant cans on your head. But yeah, it felt great. It's got the feature that I think some of the higher end PC VR headsets have of, there's a pass-through button on the bottom side. So, you know, if you need to see the real world, it'll be a black and white display of what's really in front of you using an external camera, rather than having to take the headset off, do whatever you need to do in the real world, and then refit the whole thing to your face.
Cool. Well, that's a huge vote of confidence. I know, I feel like the PSVR 2 has been a little bit of an unknown quantity in terms of, you know, how Sony's been showing it off and marketing it, but
it still needs some big games. Like, that's this counts. I really think, even though it's a game that came out a year ago, like, this is awesome, and certainly Horizon. Every time we do a video that even is in this neighborhood, I'm going to mention Half-Life Alyx. Let's go, Sony.
Put it on
Call
there.
Call Valve. Let's go. But yeah, it still needs some more particularly high-profile AAA caliber games, but really impressive with GT7.
Cool. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for chatting about this. If you want to hear our thoughts about PlayStation, I do a weekly show, Beyond, all about PlayStation. Ryan does a weekly show all about Xbox, Unlocked. You also do a weekly show about Tesla, Ride the Lightning.
True.
So, car guy, video game guy, good guy to talk to about video games. If you want to hear more about PlayStation VR, PlayStation, Xbox, all those good things, keep it right here on IGN. Thanks for watching. And we're back. And I wasn't sure if we needed to have an outro at the very end of the video or not, or the audio show, or however you're watching it. But yeah, Jada, Mark, Josh, thank you all for hanging out. I think I already said that once.
And we did.
That's, hats, yeah, y'all.
I'll take
Fancy
another
hats.
One.
Sure.
Yeah.
If you're right. If you're still here and you're listening to this outro,
this is the post credit stinger. Surprise! I was Deathlock the whole time.
Yes.
Coming soon.
Max Scoville will return in the next episode of Beyond.
All right. Thank you all for watching and or listening and or being on the show itself. We'll see you next week. Bye.
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 Beyond.
Beyond.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
Save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridans, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.